Good afternoon. This is Sarah Blanc, and I'm here with Mr. Robin Moreland, and it is July 7th, 2011. Mr. Moreland, can we start just with some basic details about where you were born and your parents' history?
Okay, my mother came to Panama in 1916. She was a daughter of one of the first 50 Panama Canal pilots taking ships through the Panama Canal. She was 4 years old. And she came down with three other sisters, a brother, and her mother and dad from Brooklyn, New York. My father came out in 1929 to work in a shipping agency in Panama, not the company that he came out to work for 2 years later on a permanent basis. Firstly, he came in 1929 to work for another company on a two-year basis. And then he was finished, and because they had other people coming out, so he went back to the to England. He was from across the Mersey of Liverpool. He was from a place called Birkenhead. Anyway, so he was sad to go back because he had already met my mother, who was like a junior in high school. And anyway, they wrote longhand, of course, letters and what have you. But then the company that he came out to permanently work for in 1931 hired him on a permanent basis. So and that was the condition. If he came out, that it wouldn't be a 2 year, it'd be permanent. So the company that I work for now, Charles Butler Fenton and Company, C.B. Fenton and Company, hired him to come out. And so he started to work there in 1931. And by that time, my mother had graduated from high school in the Panama Canal Zone. And she was like 19, and they married in 1933. And my father was working on the Atlantic side, but my mother was going to high school on the Pacific side. But anyway, so when they got married in 33, she came my mother came over, and they had, in short, they had six kids, two boys and four girls. And my father moved up the ladder with C.B. Fenton and Company to the point where he purchased the company in 1958. And then I started working in 1963. I'm a Miami Hurricane, sorry, but anyway, I went to school there for a year, and then I went to a small school in North Carolina, and then after I wasn't really school material, I was okay, and so I went back to work and started in 1963, and I'm still with the same company today. With the exception of 2 years in the late 60s, I went to South Africa. Anyway, so I came back and started working again after the 20 months, and I've been there ever since. We were always deemed by the Panama Canal authorities, being the Canal Zone government or the Panama Canal Company, to be somewhat integral to their operation of the vessels through the Panama Canal. And so many shipping agents were allotted certain areas of the Canal Zone to have their businesses. And we could also have homes in the Canal Zone, not of Panama Canal housing or anything, but separate areas where we could build our own places of residence. So we were very fortunate in that regard. We were issued I think they call them authority cards in those days, but we could shop in the commissaries. Mm-hmm. We could do everything that people, dependents of Panama Canal Company personnel also could do. So we were Zonians, and very happy and proud to have been one. Like all of my American friends, I think and talk like an American, but I am not. I'm British and Panamanian. But And I'm still down there, and I'm working with the company, trying to sell it now. We're on good feet, and we're in a former U.S. Air Force base area now, which is a economic zone. And so we still work with the ships going through the Panama Canal, and I think the family and everybody who was born and raised down there, all the dependents of Panama Canal Company personnel have been very fortunate to have been raised in the canal zone and have had the experience of going into the Republic of Panama and seeing how life was over there. And the benefits and the good life that Americans were able to lead. It showed how lucky that we were. So being in a private company in the canal zone, my father and my mother and father partook much in life in the Republic of Panama, whereas I feel that there were a few Zonians that wouldn't go outside the area of the 5 mile each side of the canal. But it was a very unique utopia place because we had our own police, our own customs, our own, and I'm sure you've heard all this. So, but for private companies, we didn't have to pay any corporate income tax or personal income tax to the United States. So that is a really...
That's the first time I've heard that one.
Right.
That's a big deal.
Because I'm probably different from the other Zonians that you meet here that are all in here. Mm-hmm. But I'm just like them, and I know many of them and their family. But I was different as well as my sisters and my brother. So I have always been proud to be a Zonian just like them, and they've accepted me as well, you know. But Joe Wood is very special, and he's a very good friend of my brother-in-law, Bert Mead, who's a Seminole. But anyway, they live together over in Tallahassee, but not together, but side by side. So basically, I went to high school there and went to UM for a year and then a small school in North Carolina. And then I came back to work in Panama in 1963. And I've lived there ever since. And it's right now it's a booming area. And the canal under Panamanian hands has really exceeded many expectations. Mm-hmm. And they're doing a wonderful job. Whereas under American government, it was doing the job it was supposed to do, but it wasn't a business. And therefore, decisions may take a day or two, whereas in Panama now, they make decisions like that. Okay, you can, well, this ship is deep down and you got to get that fixed, otherwise you can't transit. But they'll give decisions within hours. Whereas in the with the U.S. government, you know, it was... I don't want to say bureaucracy, but, well, I have to call my boss, but he's not in this afternoon. I'll speak to him in the morning. They wouldn't even call him at night, you know. Mm-hmm. But so when the Panamanian government took over in the year 2000, we've seen a lot of different things happen. That's one of the reasons my brother retired. He preferred to work it under the American system. Mm-hmm. So... But anyway, things are going well and they're widening the canal, as you know, Sarah, and it's a very busy place to be right now. And apart from the canal, other things are just growing there, banking and investment and what have you. So we feel fortunate to have been brought up in that area, born and raised there, and to have been a Zonian, I'll always be proud of that. And there are fewer of us as time goes on, you know. Mm-hmm. But I'm very happy about the Panama Canal Museum and you all picking up the ball to help out in the support of the museum because the American era should never die. And you all should be with that 100%. And it's very easy for me just to say that, but... it's very important. And Panama has a tendency, the Republic of Panama has a tendency to, they feel that their ancestors were coerced to give this piece of land in exchange for some money, maybe underhanded to a Panamanian official, mm-hmm. and to protect them against the Colombian government, who Panama was just a province of the Colombian government.
Right.
So a lot of the Panamanians blame their forefathers for having, but where would they, I mean, they are making so much money with the canal now. But, you know, they just don't like to come forward and admit that. And they consider the liberation of Panama in 1989 when Noriega was taken out by the Americans, they deem it an invasion, you know, mm-hmm. to their sovereign territory. So there's some hard feelings there, and I can understand both sides. Mm-hmm. But without the USA, there would be no Panama Canal. There would be no Panama Canal operated very well now by Panamanians. But they don't want to include that in a lot of their history. They have a museum down there. I don't know if you've been down there, but they have a museum in Panama. Mm-hmm. But they touch on the American era, but not in the way that they should be proud of. Mm-hmm. It's part of their history. It's fact. Mm-hmm. But anyway, maybe I'm talking too much.
That's the point.
It is operating well now, and I'd have to say even a little bit better. Quicker. While they widen the canal, ships are still getting through. Mm-hmm. And in this very fast world now with technology, you just have to be, in our business, you have to be on the ball. We have a lot of competition. What we do, Sarah, we receive tolls, money on behalf of our principals. We probably do about 110 ships, 105, 110 ships a month. We're probably number six out of about 25 or 30 agents. We had bigger business before. We had Maersk, who opened up their own office after 74 years. We had them. You've heard of Maersk Shipping. Mm-mm. Anyway, they were the owners of that ship that got hijacked off of Somalia about two years ago. Uh-huh. Maersk Alabama, I think it was.
Okay.
But anyway, we had some good clients, and we lost them because they, not through anything that we did wrong, but we lost them because the world got smaller and they opened their own offices there. However, so we more or less babysit a ship when she comes to the canal, or he comes to the, whatever you want to call a ship. Mm-hmm. So the owner will send us tolls money. Instead of dealing directly with the canal, they go through an agent. And so we receive that money from the owner, and then we pay the tolls to the Panama Canal authorities so that that ship can go through the canal. And then we take men to the doctor, and we deliver cash to the master if they need provisions in the way of foods or whatever they need. We ensure that they receive these requests prior to their transit of the canal, because once you transit, you want to go straight to sea instead of anchoring and waiting for. So you want to utilize the waiting time to start transit to take care of all the requirements, taking men to the doctor and what have you, and then back to the ship before the transit. Because normally they're delayed now about 24 to 48 hours mm-hmm. in transit. So they come in and they wait. If they're not pre-booked, you can also book a ship or make a reservation to go through the canal mm-hmm. A lot quicker than others. So you pay a premium to go through the canal with a reservation system. So that's basically what we do. So we pay all the invoices on behalf of the ship owner, uh-huh. and for this we assess a fee, regardless of how big or small a vessel may be. It could be a yacht, it could be a 200,000 ton ship. Mm-hmm. All the paperwork is the same. So we charge a fee, not in accordance with the vessel's size, but in accordance with the work that we have to do. So. It's very competitive.
And you said there's 20 or 30 so companies?
Yeah, I'd say 25 shipping agencies, and we're just one.
And do they vary drastically in the type of services that they provide, or are they pretty much the same responsibilities?
Same responsibilities. Okay. It used to be we handled more Scandinavian companies, but it's now basically European, which is part, Scandinavia is part of that, but European and Asian. And not too many Americans, because the merchant marine of the United States is not too much anymore. Mm-hmm. So, yes, all the agencies are supposed to do the same kind of work. And many ship owners, may not be happy with one agent and may change to another agent because of the poor service they may receive from another agent. Mm-hmm. So, but our tariffs are back to 1988. It's very competitive, so we don't increase our rates because we don't want to give more room to those that will undercut. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's tough. It's very tough, but we're doing okay. Yeah. We're doing all right.
Yeah. To go way back. So you went through all of your schooling up until high school in the zone, correct?
Yes, I did.
So you were in American schools that whole time?
Yes, I was. And the Canal Zone or Panama Canal people, that was part of their, they were dependents of their parents working for the Panama Canal, so it didn't cost them anything. But my dad, being a private business, he had to pay tuition. Mm-hmm. But he was happy to do that because the schooling was so much better than in those days than what we would get in the Republic of Panama.
And you also had wealthy Panamanian students that would come to those schools too.
Yes, right? That is very correct. Lots of Panamanians went to those schools. That is correct. And they also paid tuition just like my dad did.
Was it a little more socioeconomically diverse than it sounds, or was it pretty much like the top tier of the Panamanian students?
I would say definitely, no, I would say there was a lot of top tier that didn't go to the Canal Zone schools either. I would say more middle class to top tier went to Canal Zone schools, but I wouldn't mm-hmm. say all of them by any means. I would say to a lesser, less than 30% of them went to Canal Zone schools. Mm-hmm. Because and there's some fine schools in the Republic of Panama even in those days, but I had a lot of I think more Panamanians went to school when I was in high school in the 50s and the 60s. Hello.
Hi.
She's the paparazzi. Yeah. You can just ignore her.
Yeah, that's what everyone does.
Thank you.
Keep going. Right.
Okay. So not all of them went, not all the hierarchy or the middle class went to school in the Canal Zone because they were basically for dependents of Panama Canal Company personnel. Mm-hmm. So, and I was one of them. I am Panamanian, but I was one of those that were fortunate enough to go there. And my dad being in business they felt my dad's business was integral to the fluidity of the ships going through the canal. So we were very, very fortunate to grow up in the Canal Zone with a lot of my American friends. And I think we got preference over Panamanians because we were integral to shipping. Mm-hmm. So my dad, we could have gone to school in the Republic of Panama too, but my mom being from Brooklyn and my dad just preferred for us to go to the American mm-hmm. schools there.
Do you remember anything from your history classes in those schools?
From my history, basically it was the history that it wasn't history about Panama or anything mm-hmm. like that. It was worldwide history that you would have learned in the United States schools. It was taught as if we were not in the Republic of Panama. It was mm-hmm. taught as if we were in the United States.
Okay.
Really?
So do you have civics and
yeah.
everything?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like the United States. They wanted to make it as much American as possible. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were some things about Panama, but they didn't really focus that much on the Republic of Panama. They focused on worldwide history.
And when did you graduate from high school?
When?
Yes.
1960.
Okay. And then, so you were out of the country then during the riots there. You were in college, correct?
I came back. The riots were in 64.
Okay.
And I came back in 63.
Okay. So
and
you
so I was there. And yeah, that was a very tough time. I blame both sides. And I think that sort of the Americans said, you know, there's going to always be problems now. And I think that was so I think it was decided then under LBJ, Lyndon Baines Johnson. Kennedy was assassinated in 63. The riots were January 9th, 64. And I think they said that they would have to make a deal with Panama sooner or later. And then Kissinger, I think, made some comments under Nixon in the early 70s that he'd like to move this up from the back burner. And then Carter got a hold of it, and he just moved it straight to the front and, mm-hmm. and made the deal. And there's been a lot of American rejection of what has happened. Even Reagan, when he was running, he didn't win, but when he was running for the Republican nomination against Ford, who took over when Nixon was left office, not impeached, but he resigned from the presidency, Ford took over. But Ronald Reagan ran against Gerald Ford for the Republican nomination in 76. And he beat Reagan, but Reagan always said, I will never give away the Panama Canal to this tin horn dictator, Omar Torrijos, who overthrew a democratic government in the late 60s in Panama. But anyway, and then Carter just moved it up when he became president in 80 or 76, actually. He beat Gerald Ford, who had beaten Reagan, and then Carter became president, and he just moved the treaty up, and that happened in 77, and they signed it in 77, and it started in 79, October of 79, where we would have dual policemen, a Panamanian and an American policeman in a car, until 30 months later, October, until April of 82. And then Panamanian police were controlling the canal zone until the year 2000, when the treaty actually went into effect, where Panama was doing everything for our post office, hospitals, and what have you. Mm-hmm. It's been okay to live through all of this and to have experienced it. I'm really happy to have spent all my time down there and. But do look forward one day to moving up here. It's just the American era is over. A lot of my friends I see at these reunions, and I have a lot of Panamanian friends also. But I'd sort of like to start another chapter of my life and move to North Carolina, where I have a home already. I will always go back to Panama January, February, March of every year. It's the dry season there. It's a nice time of the year. It doesn't rain that much, and it's cooler in North Carolina. I don't like the cold. But I've got a lot of friends, and I'm thankful for them. But now, actually, you know, the last couple of years has been an eye-opener for me because I see a lot of Canadians coming into Panama now.
I heard that.
And Americans coming in. They're buying businesses, and I'm meeting a lot of people now. I said, gee, should I leave here? I'm a golfer. I like to play golf, and I don't play that much now because I'm very busy in the business. But It's still a great place. If I don't like the States, I'm going back to Panama. But I know I like the States. I spent a lot of time in North Carolina, and I know the state very well.
Have you been there for the winter?
And I've been there for the winter, and pretty brutal. But anyway, no, only through December. We've had a couple of tough Decembers, including last December. It snowed. But I just don't like the cold weather. But
yeah.
Anyway, Panama is always, you know, 85 to 95.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll get rain or sunshine and breezy, and it's nice, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But and I know the Panamanians and what to expect and not where to go on certain days, and they're protesting in the streets. That's the way it is, you know. And that's, you know, you cope with that. And so it's not as orderly as the United States, of course, you know, but yeah.
I think, you know, it's really interesting just among the handful of people that I've spoken with today. I always get to you. What did you do after the treaty? How did you feel after the treaty? And I've gotten everything from people like you who say, oh, well, you know, I still live there. And then I've had people who's said, you know, I left immediately. I took my wife and kids and I didn't feel safe in the country anymore. And I just think it's bizarre that there's such a huge difference between those two reactions.
Yeah, actually, I don't blame people who left right away when the treaty was signed, and because rumors were rife that, hey, you're going to lose your job. You better find something for your family in the States. And so a lot of people left thinking that they would be rift a reduction in force. And it's turned out that there are still Americans that never left, and they're still, and none of them have been fired. In other words, in fact, I was speaking with the fellow that your partner is interviewing now, and he just spoke to a Panama Canal pilot, American guy taking ships through the canal. They're making $1,000 a day. A day. Because overtime is so much, and they're just raking it in. And Panama has kept the American pilots, but when they leave, they replace them with Panamanian pilots. So only the people who lost their jobs, they would be put into another position, you know, if you were customs for years and years. Well, they would never reduce your salary, but you may have to do something entirely different that is not your expertise, but they wouldn't release you. Mm-hmm. So I feel badly for the people who were told that they better get out and find something in the States because you're going to get fired. And by the time you get fired, all those jobs that are available in the States would be taken. It didn't turn out that way. And many people are very sad that they left Panama so hurriedly. And those people who told you that, yeah, things have changed, but they're down there, they're happiest. Mm-hmm. Believe me.
I definitely picked up on that.
Really? Life is good. I mean, life is good. The Panamanian supermarkets are up to speed. We're doing okay. In many ways, we're third world still, many ways, but they're really moving up the ladder fast for number one economy, actually number two in all of Latin America. Chile's number one, Panama's number two, and number one by far in Central America. If you go to Panama City, and then you go to San Jose, Tegucigalpa, San Salvador, these other capitals, Managua, of these other Central American countries, I mean, it's night and day. Panama is booming, really Cosmo, and beautiful malls. When you go to these other countries, they just don't have it, you know. So we're living in a dynamic atmosphere right now in Panama. We had a big boom about 7 years ago, and then it sort of went down. And then for a couple of years, and then it started back about 3 years ago, and it's beach resorts are going up. Breezes is there now. Not that Breezes is a big deal, but I mean, but things are going. Things are moving. They're making some areas that used to be U.S. military bases, international airports now, so that people don't have to go into the Republic of to Panama City and then catch another flight or a bus or a taxi up there. Mm-hmm. So a lot of things are going forward very rapidly, and it's an oak, but it's dangerous. Security is pretty bad down there now, and so I live in a very quiet area because I'm a very quiet guy now. But I would never go into places I used to go now. It's very dangerous. You got Colombians, Venezuelans there now. That
is it all cartel
security
related?
Is bad. Bad crime is bad. So you just have to be careful. But the areas where the nice hotels are and what have you, you can walk outside, but be with somebody, you know. But it's not the safe place it used to be.
Okay. That's actually the first time someone's mentioned something about that.
Oh, yeah, it's not safe at all. I read about it all the time. I read 3 Spanish papers every day. Mm-hmm. And I pick up a lot of what's going on. And there's a lot of things that they don't like to publish because they don't want tourism to leave. Mm-hmm. People, tourism, over 2 million tourists a year now. So what's that? About 600 a day, maybe something like that, that come on into the Republic of Panama to spend money in the hotels and what have you. They think each stay is about 3 or 4 days and maybe they spend $80 to $100 a day. which I don't think includes their hotel rate. So people are, I tell you, retail is very strong in Panama.
You mentioned in the late 60s, the overthrow of the Democratic
right.
government there. Were you already involved in your company at that time?
Yes, I started in 63. And yes, there was an overthrow, but it had no effect on the canal operations.
Okay.
No effect whatsoever. Ships kept going through. The canal zone government was fine. People came to work, and it was pretty quiet takeover.
Okay.
Let me say something else. Also, in the late 80s, before Noriega was taken out, and that would have been 89, December of 89, what the United States government did, because they were still operating the Panama Canal. And so all the banks shut down in 88. This is before the invasion or the liberation. And what the United States did is that agents used to have guarantees up for their money and what have you. But the banks shut down for like 44 days in the Republic of Panama. Noriega said, no, you can't do this and that. And they shut down. And there was no way for agents to receive money from Copenhagen or Oslo or Seoul or Tokyo mm-hmm. to guarantee for the vessels to go through the canal. And the U.S. government took agents' word that when the banks reopened, they would be repaid for all the ships so that went through the canal. So the U.S. government accepted on credit because our credit used to go through the banks. And the canal zone government used to deal only with the banks and not with the agent. So the banks on our behalf used to put up for guarantee the all the vessel expenses. So there were no banks anymore. So people would fly to Miami and bring in cash of $8,000 so to pay their employees and what have you. But the U.S. government allowed, I think about, I'm not sure the amount, $15 or $20 million worth of ship tolls to go through without receiving any money. And then when everything got back to normal and the banks reopened and what have you, they were repaid every penny, but it showed, and a lot of people don't know that the United States did that. I mean, they took, so that they would not interfere with a worldwide ship traffic to affect worldwide ship owner operations and produce getting to other ports and what have you. They allowed ships to go through the canal without receiving any money, the U.S. government, really. And not many, and I think people know that, but Panamanians know that, but they don't make it a point to say how good the United States did in that instance. That was wonderful. I think it was about 44 days the banks were closed.
Was that under Reagan or Bush?
That was under, in 88, that would have been under, well, that was 88, 89, Reagan, and then who came after Reagan was Bush right?
Yeah.
So it would have been the Republicans anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they did wonderfully, really. And they got every penny from the agents. And some agents did establish accounts in New York and in Miami. But the U.S. wasn't receiving any of that money for the tolls. And so our accounts, when we moved, when we had to open accounts, our accounts went sky high without paying the United States government until the banks reopened in Panama. And then we sent that money all the way to our banks and then we paid the U.S. government. So that was very interesting time also.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you go back to the zone now, what is there?
It's the former canal zone. It's not the zone anymore. They call it the former. Panamanians call it the canal area. Mm-hmm. And it's really, the official name is the former canal zone.
Okay.
And so when I go back there now, yes, your question was?
What is it? Is it still a portrait of its old self? Is there a lot that's been taken away or changed?
Many of the areas are still the same, but it's not as clean as it used to be. The U.S. ran the canal sometimes at a surplus. Sometimes they were they were in debt, but they whatever surplus they had, they used to build tennis courts and what have you for Canal people. It was not supposed to be a profit-making organization. Mm-hmm. It was a canal constructed for worldwide shipping. And they did a wonderful job, but it wasn't a business, so they weren't interested in making money. They wanted to break even, but cover all their expenses for to make life fine in the Canal Zone for the people who worked for the Canal Zone government. And there were many Panamanians also that worked for the Canal Zone government. I think 4 out of 5 employees were Panamanians. Mm-hmm. But I think the workforce was 8, 9, 10,000 people in the Canal Zone. And so maybe 2,000 were Americans or 3,000. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. But so many areas are still the same, and the buildings are older now and not kept, maintained as well as the Americans kept them. But it still looks very much the same. Some areas have changed. I live in an area that the FAA built in the late 40s, Federal Aviation Authority. And then they turned over that area in 54 to the Canal Zone government, Panama Canal Company. And I live out in this area now, and I like it very much. But the housing that was constructed in the Canal Zone by the American people was very solid, not needing much repair. I mean, the building where my mom came to live when she was 4 years old in 1916 is still right there. I mean, poured concrete. I mean, really strong. Excuse me. So the Americans really established something really good there. And much of it is still there. All the Army, Air Force, Naval, and Marine bases were there. And now Panama owns all that. In fact, we now live in we now work out of a former U.S. Air Force base on the other side of the canal, on the West Bank, called Howard Air Force Base. But now a company called Panama Pacifico has established, through the government of Panama, Panama law, that anybody can move in there and not pay any taxes if all of your business is international. We don't have one Panamanian client, except taxi drivers that we pay, mm-hmm. pay them and what have you. And we add a little bit for insurance and what have you to build a ship owner because it costs, we pick up crew members at the airport, take them to the hotel, mm-hmm. next day pick them up, take them to the ship that is coming in. Then crew members come off and we take them to the hotel or straight to the airport. So we were thinking of having our own van service, but didn't want to get into that in case of an accident. So even mm-hmm. though you can get insurance, but they want to limit your liability. Mm-hmm. So, and Panama traffic is awful. Really? Their drivers are terrible, terrible. Yeah, really. But anyway, we are in this tax-free area now and benefiting from, we used to pay taxes, now we won't have to pay taxes. And I think the Republic of Panama has granted us permission to go in there because they want other international maritime companies coming from overseas to go into this economic area. It's a 40-year lease that the people who are operating Panama Pacifico are called London and Regional Panama. And it was the former Howard Air Force Base, which was the largest U.S. Air Force Base in the Republic of Panama. My sister, by the way, who Joe Wood knows very well, and his wife, Bev, she was the Southern Command. I think Southcom is in Miami now, mm-hmm. Or South. Maybe they're in Homestead. But she was the four-star general secretary. She was secretary to Wesley Clark, Barry McCaffrey, who was the drug czar, George Jawan, who speaks on CNN from time to time about mm-hmm. what's going on in Afghanistan and Iraq.
What is your sister's name?
My sister's name is mm-hmm. Mary Coffey.
Okay.
Mary Coffey. And she was the Southcom secretary for the four-star general mm-hmm. who was in charge of the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines for about 25 years. And anyway, and she'll be here tonight. I understand she's coming in. She's been in the States for about a month, visiting her youngest son in Kansas. And now Michael Coffey, have you met this guy, Michael Coffey? He's got something to do with this reunion here, but maybe not. But he's very much involved with the Panama Canal Society. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's her son. And Mary doesn't normally come to these, and she was here last year. So I'm surprised that she's going to come again. I don't normally come. I normally come here maybe once every 3 or 4 years, and especially when my class has. I just had my 50th class reunion last mm-hmm. year. But I made a commitment. I told somebody I would be here this year, so I'm here. But I didn't really want to be here. But anyway, I'm a person of my word. But it's nice to come here, and I bumped into a lot of people today. You know, I'm glad I came. You know,
good.
Yeah. And happy to do this on behalf of the Panama Canal Museum, the interview.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you wanted to share before we wrap up the interview?
Not really. You know, if there's anything, I can email you or something like that. Sure. I think I've more or less told you something about my life in the Panama Canal, which was a little bit different than other people who you all have interviewed, because I'm sure most of the people that you've interviewed have either worked for the Panama Canal or were dependents of Panama Canal personnel who were working with the canal. Whereas I was in private business in the canal zone, and we benefited a lot from shopping in the commies and what have you. Whereas my father and some people were jealous of the fact that we were able to operate in the canal zone and not pay corporate or personal income taxes to the Republic of Panama. And they have to shop in Panamanian stores, which are very nice and what have you, but imports, when you import something nice, and there's a supermarket there that has great American variety there, mm-hmm. but the prices are like double what you would buy them for in the stores here.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had a unique life down there. Zonians have been, they will never forget their time there. Mm-hmm. And when you first hit Panama, even today, I mean, you like it okay, but it really grows on a person, and there's many people who don't wind up disliking Panama at all. It was and is still, despite all the changes in the canal not being American anymore and what have you, it's still a great place to live.
Yeah.
But there are people who will not return because it's not the way it was.
Yeah.
And that's pretty sad because they only liked it their way. And I include a good friend of Joe Woods, and that person is my brother-in-law who lives in Tallahassee. He's mm-hmm. a big FSU guy. And, you know, Joe is a University of Florida guy. And they live next to each other in Tallahassee.
So this is probably a conversation.
Well, no, but Joe is an easygoing guy, and he's a great, great guy. And I was really happy to donate to this latest cause that they had. And really happy about the University of Florida really coming in to keep this thing burning for many, many years. And I think it's a wonderful thing.
All right.
It's a wonderful thing.
Okay. Well, I'll just wrap this up. Once again, this was Sarah Blanc here with Mr. Robin Moreland, and it's July 7th, 2011.